Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silla Cast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Today is Sunday, February 26, 2006, and this is show number 32. The No Silla Cast podcast is a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Well, welcome to show number 32. I had a great day today, let me tell you. Spent the day doing my taxes. You really enjoy that too, I bet. Boy, it's a lot of fun. But I got to tell you, I had the biggest laugh this year. Some people might suggest that our tax system in the United States is slightly arcane. But I got to tell you, I cracked up when I got to the question that said, did you receive any Ottoman Empire settlement payments? Wait a minute. Come on. Wasn't the Ottoman Empire back in like 900 or something like that, some kind of year? Anyway, it was pretty funny. So I went out on the internet checking to see what it was about. And I found a discussion group talking about this new tax question. And one guy said, well, what's so strange about that? My family is still being paid compensation from the Mongols. I don't know what the exchange rate is for yak pelts, but I'm working on it. So anyway, I thought it was pretty funny. Well, I got a new country update for you. Welcome to our new listeners from Egypt, El Salvador, Lebanon, and Nigeria. I bet you thought we were plumb out a list of countries, didn't you? I did. I still don't know how many there are, but they keep pouring in. That makes the No Silla Cast audience now from 86 countries. Simply amazing. Wanted to do a little bit of an update on Media Central. Last week, I reviewed Media Central from Equinux.com, and I mentioned that there was a thing called Web TV in there. And I was curious whether that TV station sort of thing that they had like BBC shows and that sort of thing. I wasn't sure if it was a live broadcast or if I was watching something that was pre-recorded. So Ron, my buddy Ron and I set it up on his PowerBook and on my computer, and we ran it a few minutes later on mine than on his, and mine came in right at the same point his was. So it looks like it is live TV in case you were sitting on the edge of your chair trying to find out, you know, which it was. Got some feedback this week. Listener Alfred responded to my comment about how my goal is to make as many people as possible never buy from Samsung. As you recall, I've had some issues with customer service in Samsung. I had said in my podcast that so far two whole people had avoided buying from them, but he said it's now three because instead of buying the Samsung, he bought a 19-inch Westinghouse LCD widescreen flat panel. He said Mac OS X runs great on it, and they also make a 17-inch that has a white casing around it that looks pretty good with the iMac. Thanks for the tip, Alfred. I checked it out at BestBuy.com. They look like they're good value, $400 US for the 20-inch. Cool to know the display looks good, too. Listener Susan, author of the podcatcher At Potter that I reviewed recently, is interested in synthetic voices for assistance to the visually impaired. She asked me what vendor supplies synthetic voices for the Mac. I didn't understand exactly the question, but I gave it a whirl at answering anyway. Never stopped me before not understanding the question. So I explained that the Mac operating system actually comes with a built-in screen reader with several voices, many of which are basically impossible to listen to. They're kind of comedy voices, really. But one of them isn't too bad. So to help her, quote-unquote, visualize the way it worked, I turned the voices on and moved around in the menu so that she could hear how it reacted. Since I have no experience with screen readers myself, I have no idea if this worked well or if this is really lame. I'd like to show this sometime to someone who is visually impaired and has experience like with JAWS or something. I think it'd be neat to find out whether it's any good from a hands-on user. Oh, and most importantly, Susan also mentioned that she has learned now not to buy anything from Samsung. That makes four of us now. My million-person march against Samsung is up to four. Well, my buddy Ron and I had the best time this last Wednesday night. We got to speak at a local user group on podcasting. And yeah, it was just so much fun. I got such a charge out of it. You know, Adam Christensen of the MacCast is frequently suggesting that people should take the time to go to the local users and spread the wealth of their knowledge. So kind of took it to heart and went down there and did this little presentation. And it was really, really well accepted. We explained what podcasting actually is, how to catch podcasts using iTunes and the open source Juice Receiver, how to find podcasts using some of my favorite directories, and then we even decided to give it a whirl and see if we could create a podcast and show it created on my computer and then actually come into Ron's iTunes. It was an amazing experience. the audience was really good. There were about 70 people, and they asked really intelligent questions. And these were questions I actually knew the answer to and understood the question. So that was even more fun. I think the thing I like best about these guys is they even laughed at my wiseacre cracks throughout the presentation. If the audience starts laughing, that's all I need. It is one hard thing about podcasting because I'm kind of sitting in a room by myself here, and I imagine you guys, you know, rapt attention or laughing at my silly comments, but I don't know, maybe you aren't. So it's kind of funny to do it. But it was fun to do it in front of a live audience. Sure enjoyed that. So we really pushed our luck when we decided to show them how to actually create a podcast. To be fair, I did give them a choice. I said, do you want me to show you my favorite podcast or do you want to learn how to make one? And they overwhelmingly said, no, no, let's make one. Let's see it going. So I recorded some nonsense into GarageBand and I made them applaud at the end of my tomfoolery into the recording. So each step along the way during the whole show, I wanted to show that it was real, that I was really creating this, not dry labbing it or anything like that. So I unplugged the microphone I unplugged the headphones so that they could hear the recording we had just made, but it started causing a bunch of feedback. So I got this great idea to unplug my microphone and it got a kernel panic. For those of you who don't use the Macintosh or Unix operating systems, that's the equivalent of the blue screen of death. It's unrecoverable. Your only choice is to restart. And it was really, really embarrassing, but the audience was so cool. I was actually late. I was supposed to finish at about 9, and it was like 9:05 by this time. And I said, well, you know, you want to bail on this? We could call it a day. And they said, no, you know, we'll wait for you. Bring it back up. Let's keep going. So we brought it back up, and that's when it got really funny. So the whole time I'm doing this, I'm kind of looking at the back of the screen they're looking at. So the projector and the screen are kind of in front of me, so I can't see what they're seeing. And that was fine because I was mirroring my desktop onto the big screen. But when it came back up, it wasn't mirroring anymore. It was actually doing screen spanning. So they were seeing something different from what I was seeing. So when the login screen came up, I couldn't see it. Only they could see it. So we started this great audience participation thing where all these people are like waving their arms and going, move your cursor to the left, to the left, left. No, the other left. No, wait, no, too far. Up. And they're jumping around, waving their arms. And it was so funny. And everybody was laughing because the whole thing was so absurd. But we did eventually get logged back in and we were able to create the recording. And in GarageBand, we exported it into iTunes, added some tags, and then I uploaded it to my website, created the feed using Feeder, and then Ron checked his subscription, and boom, it came in. So they were all pretty excited. I think it was actually more fun because it got screwed up on that. So I might do it again if I can get to repeat the same performance someday. So anyway, I enjoyed myself immensely, and Ron and I had a great time, and I sure hope they ask us back sometime. Well, I had even more excitement today. I picked up a MacBook Pro this week, finally got delivery. I shouldn't say finally, I think I'm one of the first people to get one, so that's kind of fun too. And, I like to bleed all over the edge, so being the first is one of the funnest parts. What I got was the dual-core 2 gigahertz model, and I got it with 2 gigabytes of RAM. There was an article I read that said that above 1 gig, going up to like 1.5 gig, applications in Rosetta perform substantially better. So I went for 2 gig on that. As I talk through my early impressions of the MacBook Pro, any speed comparisons I mention are between that and my previous 1.25 gigahertz G4 PowerBook. So first thing you want to know is what's screaming fast. Well, the best thing is Spotlight. Spotlight is Apple's Finder-based search. Oh, I just realized, for my Windows listeners and other operating system listeners, the MacBook Pro is one of the first Intel-based Macintoshes out there. So this is two Intel processors, dual-core, inside a Macintosh. So anyway, back to Spotlight. So Spotlight is the search tool, the Finder-based search tool, and it is absolutely awesome. It was searching 80 gigabyte of data on my disk, and it was literally less than a second for it to find what I was looking for. I kind of didn't use Spotlight that much on my old machine because it was kind of a lag. I mean, you know, if you really had to search, it wasn't bad, but nothing like it is now. It's really, really fast. Here's a funny thing that's fast: quitting applications. seems kind of silly, and I never really noticed that they took a long time before, but just simply quitting an application is just like, it's instantaneous. And it's like, bink, it's gone. So that's kind of fun. Switching applications is really fast too. A lot like the quitting application thing, it just, in a blink of an eye, it switches back and forth. It seems to wake from sleep faster than my old machine, and that matters to me because I never shut my system down. I simply put it to sleep. It does really well with video. VLC is the one of the video players I use a lot, and I was able to open a movie and slide the movie all over the screen, change the size, and there was never a hiccup in the video. And I used to get little hiccups where it would lose a frame and it would get kind of irritated with me if I moved around too much. I got a CD at the user group with a bunch of QuickTime movies from Apple, all the Apple ads, which is actually really cool too. And I opened all 47 of them at once. I actually did it accidentally, but I just kind of select all and double clicked, and they just flew open. I mean, rendered it really, really fast. It just went, it was probably maybe a second, second and a half before they were all open. So that was pretty impressive. I'm not a big iPhoto user, so I had my daughter check it out and compare it. She's got a 1 gigahertz iBook, and she checked it out and said it was significantly faster. So I guess that's a good data point. I tested GarageBand on both machines, and the MacBook Pro came up about 10 seconds faster. When I get more time, I'll run a convert to podcast test in GarageBand on both machines and get some statistics going. I also tested Photoshop Elements under Rosetta on the MacBook Pro. I should explain, Rosetta is the emulation software that allows you to run non-native applications on the MacBook Pro. And I compared that to the 1.25 gigahertz G4 with Photoshop Elements. The G4 actually opened Photoshop Elements about 5 seconds faster, but when I opened a file, the MacBook Pro actually opened it a split second faster than the G4. So that seemed to be pretty good to see. I haven't played around in Photoshop Elements a lot lately, so I'll do some more testing in that later too. In physical appearance, it's actually kind of a drag because they look nearly identical. I mean, if they're sitting on the table, you would not realize that they were separate models. The MacBook Pro is definitely thinner. It's actually 1 inch thick even versus 1.1 for the aluminum PowerBook, but it's 0.4 inches longer and a tenth of an inch deeper. So the screen is bigger by a quarter of an inch. It's a 15.4 versus a 15.2 and has a higher resolution and is brighter. But the aspect ratio is even wider, so you see kind of a bigger bezel at the top. The tenth of an inch thickness really makes me happy. I remember being kind of bummed when I went from the titanium to the aluminum because it went from an inch to an inch 10. And I don't know why, but that just seems so much better to be that little bit thinner. It feels really good. Oh, at the bottom of the screen, it says MacBook Pro in really shiny letters. You can tell that. It does have a built-in eyesight, so if you flip it open, you can notice that. And on the front of the bezel, when it's closed, there's actually a little IR sensor. But that's about all the indicators that it's a different machine. Probably one of the best physical attributes of the MacBook Pro is the MagSafe power connector. I'm not sure you've heard about this, but Apple got a patent on it. Instead of a traditional connector, it's actually held a power line that's connected, held by a magnet. So if you pull straight on it, it holds in really well. I mean, it's really, really strong. But if you knock it from the side or the top or the bottom, it just pops right out. The purpose of this is to keep your laptop from being yanked off the table when someone trips over the cord. Okay, everybody raise your hand. How many people have knocked a laptop off or have knocked their own laptop or somebody else's? So I liked what Steve Jobs said in his keynote about it. He said, "You're tired of breaking them and we're tired of fixing them." I did notice that the wireless signal on the MacBook Pro appears to be better than the aluminum, which was way better than the titanium I had before that. I had both machines up in the worst room in my house, and I had full bars. I think it's 4 bars versus 3 on the aluminum. So that's always good. The migration assistant did a fantastic job. If you've never used this before, what you do is you take your, as you boot up the new machine, it says, "Would you like to transfer data from your old machine?" And you say, "Why, yes, I would." You connect the two machines with a FireWire cable, and you boot the old machine with the T key held down. And what that does is it makes it into a target disk, basically a FireWire disk to the new machine. instead of being a computer with a, you know, an operating system running, it simply is a disk drive. And the migration assistant actually goes through and does everything for you. It moves your documents, it moves your applications, it moves all your settings, it moves your identities, your usernames, your keychains for your passwords. It was actually kind of a bummer because I was looking forward to all this time I was going to play setting it up, and I went in and everything was already there. So I didn't run into very many things. There were just a couple of things here and there that didn't run right. For some reason, Snaps Pro registration number, I had to re-enter that. And I think those registration numbers actually expire after a while, and that's part of what irritated it. It said I had to reload the Microsoft mouse driver. I tried it, and it technically functions, but it's a little funky, so I'll probably have to redo that. And I had to run an updater on my Microsoft apps. I kept getting this strange error, and I finally went on the web and found a place where I could run a little updater, and that problem went away. I used TextSpander to use is a keystroke command program where you can type in a couple of keystrokes, and it'll put in a bunch of text that you want to, maybe that you have to write all the time. And that wouldn't launch after the upgrade. However, I checked the developer site, and Peter Moorer at petermoorer.de had already come out with a universal binary version of the tool. So I trashed my old preference pane for TextSpander, installed the new one, and all my commonly used phrases and their keystrokes came straight in. They were all there, worked great. Congratulations to Peter Moorer on a good tool there. The same thing happened with our browser. It didn't work, but Robert Vasvari over at ourbrowser.com had a universal version too. Unfortunately, I'm still having trouble connecting to my site. I'm sure it's user error, some kind of keychain password issue. I got to work that out. Robert's really, really responsive, and I chatted a little bit with him, and he suggests that perhaps this is user error. And since 98% of the time it is my fault, I'm going to take his word for it. There was one really big problem. Research Department Niraj found out about a flaw in the NIC on the MacBook Pro that causes it to get horked up if you're on voice over IP. I'm not going to get into all the guts of how it doesn't work, what causes it, but basically, if you're on a wired connection, web surfing is abominable. I'm talking like 40 seconds to open Google. I mean, it's seriously nasty. So what's strange is it seems to be isolated to web services, so on port 80, because it doesn't seem to affect mail or chat protocols or even using Samba to get to network servers. I connect at work all the time into PC servers, and it worked great. I was able to flip around, do all kinds of great things. The good news is on wireless, it's all good. There's no issue on the when you're going wireless. It has to do being right on that same line, that VLAN that has the voice over IP. I was able to download the new VPN from Cisco version 4.9, which is a universal binary, meaning it runs on the Intel box and on the PowerPCs. Loaded it up and it worked perfectly. So when I'm at work, at least I can go wireless and maybe I'll be all right. In terms of built-in applications, the iSight is cool, but the funniest application ever written is Photo Booth. I'm telling you, if you haven't played with this, you got to go over to an Apple store and just like bring your kids, bring your mom, bring your grandma, whoever. It is absolutely the funniest thing ever. Basically, it's like you're sitting in front of a camera and it's distorting your face. There's a bunch of different ways to distort it, to squish it, to bulge it out, to make it square, to make it swirl. And I don't know, it's just hilarious. We've been playing with it on and off for the last 3 days. Just anybody who comes over, we make them do it. Done it to our housekeeper. I did it to my admin. We've done it to our friends and family. It's a lot of fun. You really got to check that out. They gave me Comic Life for free, and I know people go crazy over that. I still don't get what's so cool about it, but I guess I got to play around with it to really understand the fun. So that's kind of cool. I've been using iScroll 2 on my Macs for a long time. That's a tool that allows you to do two-fingered scrolling on your trackpad on your laptop. And man, once you start using that, it just becomes second nature. You got to have it. It's really irritating when you don't have it. Then I heard that iScroll 2 wasn't universal, and I was all sad. But then I remembered it's built in on the new Mac. So yay, I still have that. Really excited. But if you don't have one of the new Macs, check out iScroll 2 and try it. It's pretty good. I've had some problems with Safari crashing. Not sure what's going on there, but probably, maybe 10 times in a week it's crashed. So that's kind of annoying. But I don't know. It seems to have stabilized actually in the last couple of days. I did fix disk permissions after the movement of all my data and everything, and I don't know what was causing Safari to be irritated. So this machine comes with Front Row built in. Front Row is the application that lets you kind of be like a media center for your iTunes, your iPhoto, your iDVD, and your iMovie. And it's supposed to be really cool. And in the last couple of weeks, I did do some reviews of a couple other ways to do that on other computers, like Media Central. And so I was all excited I get to try the real Front Row. But man, it took forever. I'd go in to say I want a picture or a movie or something like that, and I'd wait like 30 seconds. That's just way too long for something to come up. So I loaded Media Central on it, and it just comes up, boom, 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 looks good. I really think Media Central is a much better application than Front Row. So don't be mad you don't have Front Row if you have an older computer. Just go out and download Media Central. That's the ticket. The links, obviously, are all in the show notes for when you want to find these things. I've noticed one oddity. The cursor seems to get kind of stuck. Like I'll be wiggling my fingers on the trackpad, but nothing's happening on screen for a second or so, and then all of a sudden it breaks loose and starts moving around. I've had it happen a bunch of times, but I haven't really bracketed what's causing it. I'll go a long time without it happening, and then all of a sudden it does it again. In terms of disappointments, I got to tell you, the built-in speakers on this thing are nasty. I mean, I thought my recording from last week was horrible because it was the first thing I played on it. And I was like, oh, no. And I went over to another computer and played on good speakers, and the recording was fine. It's just the speakers on this thing are just really, they're muffled. They're just, oh, it's just icky. So that's unfortunate. I'm not seeing the screaming speed across the board that I was hoping to see, but I guess that'll happen when all the applications are universal. The one last thing that doesn't work at all for me is that the Samsung microphone driver doesn't work at all. I got to get a hold of those guys and see if they've got something better. I checked the website and they didn't have anything good to download, but the driver just simply doesn't function at all. So I'm actually recording this back on the G4. That wraps up the review for now. Expect more information over time on the MacBook Pro as I dig into this and maybe do some more benchmarks. My buddy Ron and I tested out iChat with GarageBand. What they've done is they've built in to GarageBand that you can record an iChat audio conference. And the really cool trick of this is that when you're in an iChat conference, it actually records the two people as two separate tracks. So let's say the person you're recording has a lame mic or they're, far away from the mic or the level's too low. If you bring them in as separate tracks into GarageBand, then afterwards you can pump them up and boost the volumes or clean the tracks so that you've got a nice recording of both people. So it's really cool that they can do this. The way you do it is the person who's going to do the actual recording, first you both launch iChat, but the person doing the recording launches GarageBand, and it's the person launching GarageBand that has to initiate the audio teleconference in iChat. That order is important. It can't be the other guy. If you're the one doing the recording, you have to initiate the iChat conference. As soon as you get over into GarageBand, it'll notify you that an active audio chat is in session, and it'll query you whether there's a desire to actually record that conversation. They do warn you to notify you, the other person, that they are being recorded. The names on the tracks will be the buddy names of the two people in the conference. And the funniest part is once the recording is started, it's completely hands off. And this is kind of the funny benefit is that you can see in the podcast track, each time somebody talks, the podcast artwork switches to the buddy icon of the person who's talking. So that's kind of funny. So this could be fun in an enhanced podcast to have that feature there. Even if the buddy icon makes no sense at all. You know, Ron is the producer of the famous Rico's House of Squid commercial, so of course his icon is a penguin, which I'm not sure would make sense at all in a podcast. Well, in terms of an interesting website this week, I wanted to tell you about a place you can go watch all the Super Bowl commercials. Obviously, the Super Bowl commercials are way more interesting than the Super Bowl itself, so Google has them all organized for you. My friend Gene sent me a link to video.google.com/superbowl.html. Again, all links are in the show notes, so don't crash your car while writing it all down. So after watching the commercials, which I really enjoyed, I decided to check out the rest of Google's beta video offerings at video.google.com. You can watch an episode of MacGyver from season one, the Ozzie and Harriet episode, the one where Ricky grows a beard. Unfortunately, it looks like this is all paid content, even Ozzie and Harriet. It doesn't tell you that, though, until you've watched for 30 seconds or so, and then it comes up with a big screen saying, you can buy this if you want to. It doesn't tell you that this is going to be paid for content. So here's the really irritating part. Get this. You can only buy it if you have Windows 2000 or Windows XP. Totally lame. Why the heck would you need a specific operating system to buy a video recording? That's the stupidest thing I ever it's just ridiculous. So I went back and double-checked that the commercials are free, and there's even a download button that'll work on Mac, PC, video iPod, or PSP, different versions. And so I don't understand there why you wouldn't be able to download for Linux. I bet it works anyway. You could probably just open it up in VLC. But anyway, I was pretty disappointed in the beta videos from Google. I did run across another interesting website. There are movies which have moved into what's called the public domain, and that essentially means that they're free. And they're real honest-to-God movies, maybe not all movies you've heard of, but some interesting one. And it turns out somebody has put them out on available on BitTorrent, and it's called publicdomaintorrents.com. So this is actually a cool and legitimate use of BitTorrent technology. For those of you new to the show, BitTorrent is a peer-to-peer file sharing technology that allows you to download bits of a show from a bunch of people at the same time. This is efficient because you can download faster than people individually can upload to you. So if you download from a bunch of people at the same time, it's much faster. It's still a geek lover's technology, but it's getting easier to use than it used to be. PublicDomainTorrents.com has the show sorted by content, from action adventure to comedy to drama and more. I love the tagline at the top. It says, movies that made history. Sort of. These aren't your top-run movies in general, but some look pretty interesting. I started downloading a Sherlock Holmes movie for my iPod called Dress to Kill. What makes BitTorrent work so well, though, is when a lot of people are downloading and uploading the same file. That's when it gets going really, really fast. It doesn't work well at all when there's only a few people working on the same file. Some nice person was uploading to me on that Dress to Kill for Sherlock Holmes. They were uploading to me at a whopping 3.6 megabytes per second, which said it's going to take it one day and 9 hours to complete if I had waited that long. Decided not to finish. I did find Night of the Living Dead on there. Maybe that will become more popular and download faster. Night of the Living Dead is a favorite movie of mine because I actually knew the actress, Judy O'Day, who was the lead in Night of the Living Dead. So, little trivia there. Anyway, this is an interesting site. You might want to check it out at publicdomainbittorrents.com. Did you ever want to know how far you ran, or maybe how far you drove, or like you knew the path you took, but you didn't know how far it was? Check out gmap-pedometer.com. It's an overlay program on top of Google Maps. Again, I love that Google lets their APIs out so that you can play around and make interesting sites like this. So what you do is you start by finding the basic area where your trip started, and you double-click on the intersection where you started. Then you find each turning point on the road, and you double-click to set a marker. Note that it doesn't actually follow the roads. It's going as the crow flies between your points, so you have to be sure to mark curves in the road, or it's going to draw a diagonal across an arc instead of going on the curve that you were trying to do. As you go along your path, it shows you the total distance and will show you the length of the last leg you just clicked on. You can turn on mile markers so you can see how far you were each bit of the way, and you can even put in calorie counters. It shows the elevation gain loss as a function of distance, too. You can export the route as a GPX file, which I'm pretty sure is the format that you can use to pull the file into your GPS unit. I'm not too versant on that part, so if somebody out there has a GPS and can test that out and let us know how it worked, that would be cool. Anyway, that seemed to solve a problem. I was actually thinking of looking for something like that, and my buddy Ron showed it to me. Well, it looks like that's going to about wrap it up for the No Silicast. I promise you more feedback on the MacBook Pro over time. And I really appreciate you tuning in. Feedback is always welcome. I love to get emails from you guys at allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.